Well, hello and welcome to another episode of SPIN, your podcast for everything related to the LGBT Meeting Professionals Association. I'm your podcast host, Ashley T. Brundage, here to put that empowering spin on a conversation that we're having today. I've brought an amazing friend of mine for you all to meet, and I think you're going to like our conversation because we're going to talk a little bit about history. We're going to talk a little bit about LGBTQIA plus history. We're going to talk a little bit about legal aspects in the meeting and events industry, because this is a hot topic. People are stressing about where they go, what they do, what their rights are. Who better than to have a conversation with employment attorney, legal expert, Zaylor Stout, who's here with me. Thank you, Z, for coming in and joining on the podcast. We're so happy to have you. Can you just take a few minutes, and I've kind of given a little bit of glimpse into your expertise, but can you talk for a moment a little bit about you and who you are and what you do for our listeners?
Absolutely, and I'm honored to be here today, so thank you so much. My name is Zaylor Stout. I am the founder of Zaylor Stout & Associates, which is an employment law firm with locations in both Minneapolis, Minnesota, as well as Pasadena, California. When I say employment law, that covers four aspects: discrimination, sexual harassment, wrongful termination, and wage and hour issues. We have about 75% of our clients are companies, small and medium-sized businesses. We also have larger organizations that we represent, as well as municipalities. And so 75% of our business is that, 25% is representing employees that are aggrieved in the workplace. A lot of that ends up being impact litigation. But as Ashley, as you had alluded to, I'm also a historian. So I wrote my first book, Our Gay History in 50 States, which highlights significant people, places, and queer facts on a state-by-state basis. And I'm in the midst of writing my second book, part of the collection, Our Black History in 50 States, which is slated to be out Juneteenth of next year.
That's so awesome. I cannot wait. I've already pre-purchased the empowerment bundle that you had for that, which I was like, oh my God, that one says empowerment. I guess I have to buy that one. Yes. So I know that that your expertise, you know, in employment discrimination and oftentimes people don't even realize that when they're attending an event, right, that's part of it, usually part of their job function, that they're you know, a company is sending them, or they're representing a city. I know a lot of our listeners are in this space with their meetings, and the meeting is their life. That is literally their livelihood. So can we talk a little bit about these legal impacts of potentially in a meeting that might not be inclusive? Because I know the goal is to have, especially the people who are listening on our platform, are definitely wanting to have an inclusive meeting. But what happens when you make a mistake, right? Because obviously something always happens eventually, and it's just a matter of people who are more prepared are the ones that win in the end of the day. Talk a little bit about what your thoughts are on this.
Well, first, I'd like to reference in regards to what, you know, what does it mean to have an inclusive meeting, and why should we focus on having inclusive meetings? And being a historian, you know, no social justice movement has been successful without the assistance of allies. And so understanding that, and even though it may be an organization that is focused on X, Y, or Z, or uplifting X, Y, or Z community, you always want to make sure that it's inclusive, because we all need allies in order to be able to move the track forward in regards to progress for everyone. So there are assumptions that people have with organizations as well as some meetings, thinking, well, am I welcome? Am I allowed to come? And so more often than not, the recommendation is to make sure that there is a specific statement in regard to the fact that it's an inclusive meeting. And so that, you know, people that do decide to read in the details in regards to it, they can find out and be affirmed that they'll be included and welcome there. But then what happens when something happens and it's not inclusive? Or, you know, should there be safe spaces for folks, or for there to be carve outs? And those opportunities need to be important and welcome as well. And sometimes there needs to be an additional dialogue and discussion in regards to why that's the case. So for example, you know, I attended a conference recently, and there was a specific, you know, meeting that was for Black women. Right? It was supposed to be a safe space for Black women to have dialogues and discussions in regards to the challenges, in regards to mobility up within ranks of senior management and things of that nature. And sometimes it's hard to have those discussions. and having to explain the lived experience of being a Black woman to other people that aren't Black women in that space when that's not really what it's all about. So sometimes it's having the dialogue in regards to why those types of meetings are important and helpful and necessary. And so I'm sure I've been rambling on. So I'm sure you want to jump in here, Ashley, if you want to add stuff here.
No. I think it's important. I like this idea of the spaces that people can have. I once had a book signing at a queer space designed by lesbians. It was literally the name of this historic bar in New York City. And so I like this idea of, you know, creating the opportunity for people to have a dialogue discussion. You know, it's almost like, you know, you have a ramp, and that ramp, the premise of ramp is having the ability for someone in a wheelchair, right? Or someone who needed the ability to not go up the steps to get into your facility, to get into your event. We almost have to think about it like that in this environment for LGBT professionals, right? Because sometimes, you know, I know, right, the TGX community are right now, they seem to be the most disproportionately affected by a lot of the pieces of legislation, you know, that are being discussed or passed or in this space. So I'm just wondering, like, your topic around like the inclusive space and the dedicated discussion, like what else can we do beyond that just those elements?
What I will also reference is, I mean, being open to dialogue and constructive criticism, right? Nobody's perfect in regards to any of these spaces. And, you know, had this dialogue is great because it's got me thinking about different situations where I've been at events where something didn't necessarily go right, right? Or there was a hiccup or something. A very common issue that seems to come up lately has been in regards to, as you had just referenced a moment ago, folks with disabilities, right? That there may be a lot of folks that attend our sessions that may have a bit hard of hearing, right? And so having closed captioning already worked into the dialogue, the presentation, or having somebody there that has the ability to provide sign language, all those things are important and helpful. Asking those kinds of questions in the questionnaire ahead of time is helpful in regard to things. Making sure that presenters use mics. You know, sometimes we're like, oh, the mic didn't work. I can still go on without having a mic. But then that could be problematic for folks that are a little bit further in the back. And that's not necessarily something that we think about because we're like, well, I'm able to project. It's not a big deal. But, you know, having that additional assistance in regards to volume can help from that perspective as well. So it's just, there's so many areas, especially since the LGBTQI plus community is really a microcosm of the broader community. You know, we have folks from all aspects of life, all different religions, all different, you know, races, religions, all those different types of things. So we need to be aware of all of that. And if there is criticism that comes up, see it as an opportunity to be able to be better in the future. And really don't take it to heart, because I know that sometimes people take it very personally in regards to these things. And it's moving forward to ensure that this is not a challenge that you have to work on moving forward, that it's something that gets baked into the cake.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And, you know, it's you made me think of something else here, especially just because you talk louder does not actually mean that people can hear you better, because the pitch changes when you have to yell. Sure. And all of a sudden that can change the way at which someone can study and listen to you. It's just interesting. There's so many nuances in relation to how we have these differences as humans, right? This is literally why my research is about empowerment of the differences that we have. But let's go switch gears a little bit and talk a little bit about destinations, because I know you and I speak at a lot of conferences and
events. This is where the rubber hits the road, right?
Right. And the rubber, whether that be the rubber from the plane landing on the runway, or the vehicle, or the side buffer of the train arriving in the station, you name it, the rubber is rubbing somewhere in relation to us finding ourselves in the same room at a convention. Which, right. I love it when that moment happens. But let's talk a little bit about the destinations, because I know that right now there's a destination representative watching or listening to our podcast and is thinking, I need some help here, because I'm really scared that people are not going to want to come to our city, even though we have some of the most inclusive laws in our city, but the state saying something different.
Right.
So what can destinations do to really improve the legal rights for people in the LGBTQ plus community?
Yeah, let's talk about that one first. You know, choosing a location that's inclusive and choosing a location that provides the full array of legal protections for all of your attendees that are going there, and being deliberate in regards to saying, we picked this location because of this, especially if you had the opportunity to select a different location where that may not have been the case, then that puts pressure on the location where you did not select in regards to, hey, are we losing out on business in regard to this? Because a lot of these places, a lot of the elected officials, a lot of the legislatures, as and should be concerned in regards to tourism and business and folks coming to their state, to their cities, to their beaches, to their restaurants, you know, to their, you know, convention centers and all of that. So, you know, organizations being very deliberate in regard to that can, you know, can push the envelope in regard to things, especially if you're a larger organization. So, an example that I can provide is, you know, the NCAA and the NCAA and, you know, some of these larger, you know, nationally renowned, you know, sporting events, when they choose to go to certain locations or they choose not to go to certain locations, can make a big impact and make a big deal, especially based on the financial impact that it has when they choose to go to some of these places. And if they make a, you know, a across the board blanket statement that we're not going to be going to places where, you know, LGBT folks aren't included or women's rights aren't included, or, you know, their bathroom bills on the books as it relates to that, that makes a difference in regards to, I think, the pressure in regards to the legislature, especially if these are locations where these organizations have historically held events.
So in relation to, so if someone is coming, regardless of whatever the case may be, what can the destination, like the actual city that's inclusive in nature, do to make
it? Got it. Yeah, that's right. There's so many different layers here.
Yeah.
So, you know, example. So, there, I mean, I'll be attending a conference later on in the year that's going to be in Houston, Texas. As one of us know, Texas is not one of the places that are very inclusive of LGBTQI plus folks currently. And there's still additional legislation that they're putting forward to either curtail the rights of members of the community or parents of members of the community, which is important as well. And so what the locations can do is to be very upfront in regard to the fact that these are spaces and places where the community is going to be protected and accepted, you know. And so for the conference that I'll be attending soon, you know, you have the mayor out there, you know, giving you know, statements in regard to the fact that this is an inclusive place and space, and, you know, and that we're welcoming of you and want you to be here. You can look at the track record of the location as well. Houston is one of the places where they accept LGBT certified businesses in their supplier diversity chain, yet alone some of these other progressive states and cities don't necessarily have that in the books as well. So these are different, you know, standards and practices that you can look at to see whether this is going to be a safe space for you and your folks, as well as uplifting the LGBT businesses and locations where you're going to be staying at and patronizing, and to ensure that the policies that those organizations have are ones that are inclusive as well. Additional things can be making reference to any type of security that the organization is going to be putting into place to ensure that there's additional protections for folks there. I mean, there's just an array and a multitude of different things that can be done. But I think it's about being proactive in regard to the fact that you're wanting to support those places where there's inclusion, as opposed to writing off the entire state because the elected officials for the entire state may not necessarily be as inclusive.
Yeah. And I know that it's such a hotly contested debate around being there and being present. I love your suggestion around purposeful and LGBTQ entrepreneur inclusion. And obviously, if you're listening and you're wondering what that is, right, you can go to nglcc.org, and that would guide you to the National LGBT Chamber of Commerce. There are more than 2,000 certified LGBT entrepreneurs that own businesses in the United States alone. And so that's a big thing. And then internationally, there are more than 18 countries with supplier diversity programs and LGBT chambers that operate. And I think it's really important that we do what we can do to be an amazing ally wherever we go, Being visible, being purposeful is a big part of this. I mean, obviously we've been friends for quite a while. So for those that are listening, you know that you now know that me and Z go way back, and I know how much of an amazing ally you are for the TGX community, transgender, not gender nonconforming, non-binary, gender expansive people. And I know that they're the ones that are taking the brunt of most of these anti-LGBTQ pieces of legislation that are proposed or discussed, around the world. Can you talk for a little bit about what it means to be an ally to the TGX community and why it's important to you?
I can, and I do love this question. It's not unlike being an ally for Black folks or immigrants or for women, right? It's number one, calling people out and calling people in when it's appropriate, especially when members of that community aren't there, right? It's easy to pay lip service to my friend Ashley when Ashley's right there in front of me. But when Ashley's not there, what am I doing when Ashley's not there? When people are saying derogatory things or trying to implement policies that aren't inclusive of transgender, non-binary folks. That's the true test of when somebody's an ally, is when they're speaking up when the people aren't in the room. And that's ideally the situation when it should be as well. I shouldn't have to worry about Ashley, you know, when worrying about what Ashley's going to do or say, or if I don't stand up for them. I should want to be able to do that regardless, right? And so it's that, which is number one and very important. Number two, making sure that you're uplifting the voices and the messages being put out there by members of that community. So I don't know what the lived experience is like of being transgender or non-binary, right? But I have dear friends that are. And so I do have some knowledge as it relates to it. But what better way to be able to get the word out in regards to their experience than to share and uplift their statements, their posts, their podcasts, their newsletters, their business? Sadly, because, you know, most folks don't have the experience of meeting somebody that's transgender or non-binary. And so it's easy to be able to demonize somebody that you don't know, right? It's being afraid of the unknown. So providing an opportunity, providing a space for folks that don't have different folks, you know, transgender, non-binary folks in their circle of influence, creates an opportunity to bridge that gap in regard to those discussions. And then three, sometimes I think it's important to explain the why, right? And this kind of gets to even folks within our community. So, you know, one of the things that I always do when I'm having speaking engagements, especially to members of the LGBTQI plus community, is talking about the privilege that gays and lesbians have and how we as a community haven't been as inclusive or welcoming of transgender and non-binary folks as we should. And speaking that, you know, speaking the truth as it relates to that experience and providing an opportunity for people to be able to rally as it relates to that. So there was a gay white male leader that I know that's, you know, very revered within the community that had some reservations in regards to why are we adding all these additional letters onto the acronym, right? Why can't it just be gay and lesbian? And so sometimes it's just sitting down and having that conversation and breaking it down. So for me with him, I was like, well, let's say you have somebody that was assigned male at birth and transitioned to female, right? Now they're a woman. They like men. Are they gay? No. Are they lesbian? No, right? They're heterosexual. So what's the letter that corresponds with them? And why would you want to force them into identifying with a letter that doesn't correspond with their lived experience? And so, you know, it's weird that it takes something like that for the light to be able to come on, but sometimes it's taking the time to have that dialogue and that discussion, especially since our trans and non-binary siblings unfortunately have to explain these kinds of things to people all the time. And so we need to take the weight and the burden off of them by being able to have those dialogues and those discussions to be able to get folks to be able to understand that and not expect for them to spend their entire life explaining things to people.
Yes. Oh boy. You mean the book fatigue.
Yes, absolutely.
I've done enough trans 101s that I'm at trans 1,000,001 now.
Oh my goodness.
Right. And we call it trans fatigue because it's how many, literally every night I go out. And people know that I'm a professional educator and a leadership expert and that I used to do one-on-one sessions. So they think anytime they can have on the, hey, I have some questions. Can you answer them for me? Right. Almost like, wait, what happened when George Floyd was murdered? Did you get a lot of phone calls?
1,000%. 1,000%, right? And there was, and many, especially because I'm here in Minneapolis, right? With the epicenter in regards to exactly where this happened. And there are many Black folks that just had to like, we just had to take a break, just had to like step away from folks and everything. Cause all of a sudden everybody's like, hey, I want to do something. And it's like, we've been telling you this has been going on for a long time. What? George Floyd wasn't the first Black person to be killed by the police here locally either. And these are discussions and dialogues that have been going on for a while. So that fatigue is ever present there in regard to that as well. And yes, like you, I'm a professional educator in this space. These are, you know, I feel part of my job and my calling as well as in regards to being able to pull additional allies to our movement, whether it be, you know, Black equality movement, or the LGBT equality movement, or any of the other movements that there is. But, you know, there are times when you just, you get fatigued, you get burnt out, and you can't have that discussion yet again, when somebody could easily type something into Google and get a million resources that they could read up on their own.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like systemic racism has existed for more than 400 years.
That part.
Yeah. Like, I don't know, maybe you might want to do just a little bit of research. Maybe you'll learn about some things like redlining and other terms and segregation.
Jim Crow.
I don't know.
More than MLK and Rosa Parks, right? And they're not. Yeah. Then they're even trying to pull back on the Rosa Parks story, trying to say that she was just a woman that didn't want to give up her seat, and not reference the fact that it was because she was a Black woman that shouldn't be sitting in the front of the bus, or the fact that, you know, any of that stuff.
I feel like that might be having to do with some situation with a certain governor in a certain southern state.
Yes, absolutely. You wouldn't know anything about that. No.
Yeah, I wouldn't know anything about that scenario. Yeah, so I don't have a problem. I'm ready to be that woman that's in the restroom that someone's like, oh, I don't know that you belong. And I'm going to be like, oh, here you go. I'm going to have my arms up. I'm going to be like, do you want to cuff me this way or do you want to cuff me behind? You tell me, because I'm ready.
But it shouldn't really come to that.
Right. Well, yes. But legal ramification wise, if someone were to go down that road, I feel like that we're really close to this cusp of creating trans civil rights era movement. And it's going to have a cataclysmic moment where someone is going to, in essence, fight back from this kind of discrimination. And so legally, you know, and this is a scripted question, but I almost wonder, like, legally, like, that's going to happen at some point. There has to be a martyr. There has to be, unfortunately, there has to be a martyr. There has to be someone that stands up against that kind of situations. And I feel like that legally, we're going to have their back, right?
Yes. I mean, again, civil disobedience has been a significant and important part of the advancements of many of the social justice movements that we've had here in the United States. And so, you know, it would just be continuing on the tradition as it relates to that and looking to see who else is along there with him.
Yeah.
Right.
I think an entire civil disobedience movement was the Revolutionary War.
Well, yes.
Right? That one worked out okay.
Right?
The end result, right? I love it. We've been talking about history. We've been talking about LGBTQ inclusion. We've been talking about a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. And it almost feels like I'm ready to give you my last question, my last takeaway question, if you're ready. And I include this as our takeaway for those that are our listeners, because, you know, we really want to know, right? And you can go to the chat, you can go to the comments, and share what you do to empower others. But so how do you put that empowering spin on the world, Zaylor?
Well, using one from your Empowering Differences book and workbook and program. There's a couple I can select, but I think I right now I'm feeling inspired, right? It's inspiring by making sure that I'm writing books that are there and available to inspire young people to be able to see themselves reflected in history and know that they can become history makers themselves. It's inspired by sharing your story and by doing that, humanizing some of these issues that from a political perspective, people may be raising up just to score political points, when it's really real people and real people's lives that are at stake in regard to that. You know, the example that I'll give is, you know, Harvey Milk said way back then, way back when, you know, everybody needs to come out and have dialogues with their family and their neighbors and the like. And Minnesota ended up being the first state to defeat a marriage amendment. And that's because part of our, you know, movement here on the ground was go out into all those communities and share your story. Knock on people's doors and share your story in regards to why it is that you're for marriage equality and things of that nature. And we were the first state to buck that tide. And then we know what ended up happening. The United States Supreme Court ended up ruling in regards to marriage equality. So, you know, inspiring is important. There's a bunch of different ways to be able to do it. You don't have to write a book, right, to inspire from that perspective. Sometimes it's just living your life and having your LGBT lawn sign out, so that maybe there's a queer kid that lives on your block and they see that sign and they see you walking your dog with your partner and they see that you help the neighbor in regards to raking their leaves and they see that you're living the basic, boring, normal life that everybody else always wanted, right? And they thought that we shouldn't be able to have by being able to be together. But even something as simple as that inspires folks, even if you don't necessarily think that it is. So there's many ways to be an inspire. And so I think inspires would be my spin in regards to how it is that I feel like I'm impacting the world.
Oh my God. I love it, because the whole framework that I built around inspire is communication, basically, you know, but inspire is a much sexier way of communicating communication. And all the methods that you were talking about were methods of communication. A sign can make a communication statement. You can do it. You can be visible. And that makes a communication statement to people. Obviously, your words, your voice, all of those things can drive inspiration. I love it. Thank you so much. Wow. I cannot believe. Yeah, please.
All right. One more thing that I missed referencing when we were talking about your destination and your location. Yes, there are LGBT certified businesses that you can use, but there are also minority certified businesses, disabled certified businesses, veteran certified businesses, women owned certified businesses. So those are also folks that you can include in your supplier diversity effort to be able to be like, hey, we're making an impact to support and uplift all of those marginalized groups in those organizations, those communities. Because I know that, collectively, that there's a lot that we can do together. And so this is a great way to be able to uplift everyone. So I just want to make sure I threw that little bit in there, since I missed that earlier.
Yeah, well, supplier diversity is so important into driving impacts and empowerment for people. And then there's a big history behind that too. So I feel like that might have to have you back at some point.
I love it.
Especially because, you have another book coming out. So I'm really excited about that. Tell people how they can connect with you. Where do they go to find you on social media and your website?
Perfect. So if you want to connect with me on LinkedIn, it's my name, Zaylore Stout, Stout. On social media, you can connect with our gay history in 50 states at gay50states. And with the book, the Black History book that's coming out, it's Black50States, and it's the same email as well, not email, website. So awesome. gay50states.com, black50states.com. Awesome.
I love it. No, thank you so much for being here and joining us. As we put together, we put an empowering spin on the world when we shape, change, and communicate and drive inspiration for people. And I'll look forward to seeing you all and having you all listen to us for our next conversation. So it'll be coming out to you very shortly. Thanks so much, and we'll see you again soon.
Thanks.
Bye. Thank you. How did you think that one goes? Is there anything that you wanted to reword or retool?
No, I stumbled over the stupid website and stuff at the end. I don't think it cares.
Do you want to redo that part?
You can if you want.
I mean, it's up to you.
No, I'm fine.
Okay. Are you sure?
What do you think? You think I should redo it, actually?
I thought it was fine. I thought it was okay.
Perfect.
Yeah. It just shows you you're very human.
I'm not perfect. Nowhere close.
All right. So we're good. All right. I'm going to click stop recording. Live by.